Good morning and welcome to a special Sunday morning season finale edition of the Upstate Hoops Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube. I'm Jim Sinacropi with a full house tonight. We have Dave Barnick, the mouth from the south. We got Matt Verkey, Kevin Korzeneski, and head coach of the Lions, Zach Young, the only team still alive in playing basketball. Today's going to be a little different. We're going to recap kind of the season as a whole. We're going to talk to Zach about his run through the playoffs and what lays ahead next weekend in Glens Falls. A very, very special season recap video to end the show, so you'll want to stay tuned for that at the end of the show. And let's welcome everybody in. First of all, Dave, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. It's nice to see everyone, and I think Zach deserves a special round.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Outstanding effort. Congratulations.
First ever standing ovation in Finger Lakes One Studio.
And just so you know, and I don't know where these ideas come, but I've been working on a special high school documentary going back, and this idea popped in my head. I got some blanks still to fill in, but the title of it's going to be I Hate Matthew Verkey.
That should be popular. And, of course, talking about the Christian Leitner documentary tonight on ESPN. Verk, how you doing?
Real good.
Verk and I went up and watched that game last night in Rush Henrietta, or yesterday afternoon. Saw Lions defeat Middle Early College. It was a lot of fun. We'll talk about that. Corzy, hello.
Morning.
And thanks for coming up. And then Zach, so glad you can make it up here. One day after your team advances to the Final Four, and it's you're starting to really carve a nice legacy of your own in the tradition of great Lions coaches, really.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Two sectional titles, a Final Four trip, first one since 1997 for Lions, and we're going to talk all about it today. So we did 27 games this year, which is kind of phenomenal. And we had about 20 studio shows, too, and we talked to so many kids and coaches, and it really is amazing when you look back at the season as a whole. Corzy and I sat in this studio in November and announced our schedule, and it seemed kind of daunting at the time when we went through it. Then we executed on all the games, a lot of HD games, a lot of memorable moments. And we've been riding this thing right out here into the postseason. The postseason has been amazing. And last time we were with you guys here was prior to the sectional semifinal rounds. And, maybe that's a good place to start. It was kind of a Black Monday for Finger Lakes teams, Wayne Finger Lakes teams. On the same night that Zach's Lions beat Wheatland Chi-Lai, Minders boys went down. Dundee boys went down. Jake Slobe's Red Creek Rams went down.
Naples.
Naples, Palmac, and Waterloo and Hornell. And it was kind of disappointing because we were planning on doing maybe a triple header on Saturday at the Big House and then maybe even a double header. Newark loses in the semifinals the next day. And so it was kind of disappointing, but I guess the Lions have made up for it all, giving us more than enough memories. But let's start with the games in Bloomfield. Naples loses to RCMCS in the semifinals, a team that Lions beat in the Big House. And, Corzy, you called that game with me. We were big fans of that Naples team, and I thought they played pretty good, but they came a little short.
Yeah, it was a disappointing game and atmosphere because the Naples Green Machine showed up in full force being the game was in Bloomfield.
Yeah.
And, RCMCS I thought was one of the most talented teams I've seen and see. And I've had the discussion with Zach who I think that might have been the most talented group that I saw them play. And Naples played well. Tilly struggled a little bit. And when you got a player like Isaiah Tilly that's so good and you do so much around – at that point in the season when you get into the semis or sectionals, you really need, your big guns showing up. And I wouldn't put the loss on him, but,
no.
If he had a little bit better a game, maybe they could have pulled off that game. But Naples had a great season. They're a great team. A lot of good memories for that crew for sure. Gorton played great. And
Fleischman hit some big threes.
Yeah. You know, I remember that step back three that Fleischman took.
It took a lot of guts to let that one fly.
You know, dribbled back in the end of the game to bring them close. But, you know, too bad for Naples. They had a great season, and they played well. They didn't play bad. Yeah. RCMCS was just a little bit too much. Amos Williams and Kurt, you know, were just a little bit too much for Naples that night. I think if they played again, Naples could certainly beat them.
Yeah, and it was a strange thing happened there. Noah Gordon went to the free throw line at the end of that game. They were down three when he went to the line.
They were down three when he made the line.
First one, and then nobody. We're pretty sure the coach didn't tell him to do this.
I'm almost positive by the reaction of Coach Salter that he did not tell him to do that.
Instead of trying to make the second one to make it a 1-point game with about
20. I think there's 15 to 20 seconds left, you know, and that gives you plenty of time to foul again. So if you're thinking about what's going on, you're down two. Gorton, in his own head, said, I'm going to miss this foul shot.
Yeah.
Try to get the rebound, and then we're going to tie it up. When if he just makes it, then it takes it to one. Even if RCMCS comes down and makes both foul shots,
you're still
down one possession. But now it went to a two-possession game, and that really ended it. And you know, Gorton will learn from that mistake. But he didn't even hit the rim.
That's the thing. I don't think he knew he had to hit the rim because he tried to bounce it hard off the backboard, and we were kind of stunned. But great season by Naples, and that just goes to show you what kind of the postseason can be like. You know, you're undefeated, you run through the whole season, and then boom, you know, it's just done. And then later that day, Zach's Lions beat Wheatland Chi Lion, which was a very entertaining game. And I don't want to get to Zach just yet. I want to go. I want to, because when we do, we're probably going to stay there for a little while. I want to talk about Minders real quick. Losing one game short of the Big House to East Rochester, which ended up making three Wayne County teams going to the Big House, which is something we debated all year, the strength of the leagues. And I mean, I think without a doubt, Wayne County League, Dave, was probably the strongest, sending three to the Big House, and one of them the fifth place team, I think, East Rochester, right?
Yeah.
So the league champion Red Creek Rams lose on a shot with 6 seconds left to Geneseo. North Rose advances in an amazing game in Waterloo. The Lions, of course, advance, and East Rochester beat Minders. And talk a little bit about that league this year, Dave.
Well, with Minders, I remember Matt or Kevin in an early season game saying, this is a team that lives and dies by the three, so if they are not hitting their threes, and I suspect that's what happened in that game, they lost somewhat. But, right, the outcomes of the sectional games, it was clear. I think when you first opened up today, you said the Finger Lakes, Wayne Finger Lakes, you know, a lot of the teams went down, but actually, obviously from Lions, but other teams as well. Wayne County League fared pretty well overall, whereas both the East and the West of the Finger Lakes, pretty dismal results.
They brought everybody to the semis right on the brink. They had a lot. That's why we were planning. I was scrambling to get our announcing crew in case we had to do five games that weekend. And we ended up only doing one a day.
Yeah, we talked about it here. I mean, the East was down when Geneva's, you know, only winning three or four games in the league. You know, it's a down year a little bit. And Wayne was down. We're also competing. A lot of those schools are competing in Class A and, you know, B1. So it's a little different when you're playing, you know, some bigger schools when you get into sectional time. But overall, yeah, you know, Wayne County showed up and made a great run there. Obviously, you know, especially, you know, Red Creek, I'm sure they're probably were the ones that were most disappointed not to get to play in the Blue Cross this year with the season they had.
And what about Minders, Burke? You know, they lose to East Rochester, second-place team. The East loses a fifth place in Wayne County. East Rochester much smaller than Minders. I mean, we were...
Yeah, I went to that game. It was a game where, you know, when you look at the teams, you would think Minders are going to kind of dominate that game a little bit. But, you know, a lot of credit to ER. Their guards played with a lot of enthusiasm. They got some quick little guards, and they played well. Minders didn't finish well, didn't shoot the three well. You know, we had some of our Minders' better players didn't have good games, and, you know, that's why they play the games. You know, on paper, you might say, yeah, Minders are going to roll. But, you know, when you look at Minders, I think they had a really good year. That, you know, we didn't know what they were going to do this year, really, with some of the losses they had. And I think they maybe overachieved a little bit to finish second in the East this year. And, you know, they ran into a hot ER team and got beat.
And ER's done that before. You know, it's a unique style. They play that aggressive kind of matchup zone. I think they played some triangle and two. and they practice that, and they've done it before when they play teams that aren't familiar with them in sectionals. You know, Coach Michaels has a very good record in sectionals, and you know, it's a credit to them for sure.
So,
I think Red Creek would be a good place to go, because I had the opportunity to see them twice, and we all enjoyed not only the caliber of Jake Slope's play, but just the genuineness of the young man's passion for the game.
Right, and it rubs off on his teammates, too.
But what I noticed, particularly against Zach's Lions teams, he's not a creator, but he also knows well enough not to force the issue. And somehow I would have liked to seen Red Creek figure out a way to get the ball back to him quickly after that double team drifts back. And the game, the Lions beat them pretty handily, actually. They took the air out of their bubble up in Lions. I thought that didn't happen nearly enough.
Yeah, and it was odd in Wayne County how Red Creek loses twice to Lions. North Rose Wolcott beats Lions twice, and Red Creek beats North Rose Wolcott twice. And then the difference, the thing that handed Red Creek the title, was the fact that both North Rose Wolcott stumbled at Clyde, and earlier in the season, the Lions lost to SOTUS in a game that Damon Hunter didn't play. So Red Creek won their first school's first outright Wayne County title. It was a season's of first, actually, their first win over Clyde at Clyde ever, you know? And so I had Jake up in the booth with us at the Blue Cross Arena on Sunday's championship game, or it was actually Saturday, and talked to him a little about it, and he was disappointed. He had just watched the C2 final where he had hoped to play in, and he had just made the all C2 tournament team. And I said, you know, it probably isn't too much fun now coming up here watching all this, but, you know, a month, 2 months from now, you're going to look back at this season and you're going to be so proud of yourself because you've done something that nobody in your school's ever done. And, you know, you always have that. So, you know, but it is, that's one of the things I think that's so engaging about the high school basketball that we follow is, you know, we get to follow these guys for 2, 3, 4 years sometimes, and then when it's over, it's over. At least a lot of these kids, some of the better ones, hope to play in college, but for most seniors, they will never play organized basketball again. So, you know, I think it's pretty exciting stuff when you watch them play when they're on the brink like that. So,
the finality of it, much like March Madness,
and it's the same thing for those guys, and most of those guys aren't going to the NBA, and you know, it's just over. And even if they do go to the NBA, it's just a different world. So so it's very exciting, and it was disappointing to see so many Wing Finger Lakes teams lose so close to that goal, because let's face it, a goal for most teams is sectional championship. Everything after that is gravy. And I'm going to still hold off before we chronicle the Lions' run. And I want Dave.
Sorry for interrupting, but that's a good point. And I think Zach is one person right here that could answer it, but we all have probably the same opinion on it. If you had a choice between a league title and a sectional title, what would you take?
Yeah, most people would take the sectional. Everybody would take the sectional title. It's a question we ask a lot of kids. And you know, I think the league title's important to them because they're the teams they're battling with. But at the end of the day, they could come in. You know, like, I don't think Zach, you wouldn't trade your second place Wayne County finish for the sectional title, would you?
They only count banners in Lions.
That's right.
You get a banner for the sectional title, and you don't for the league. You know, league's nice.
Yeah.
You want to win the league, but, you know, sectionals is definitely the goal.
Yep. So, Dave, you did a little research on the early round games, and, you know, it's kind of crazy in sectionals because that opening weekend, you got teams sometimes traveling 2 or 3 hours to you know, a high seed to face a low seed, and the low seed travels 2 or 3 hours by bus and then loses by 40 and then goes home, you know. And so I know you put something together, so I'll turn it over to you.
Quite a bit. I think it starts with the fact, and most it's not a secret, that enrollment figures in the Finger Lakes and most schools in Section 5 and most of upstate continues to drop, yet the number of classes in sectional play in Section 5 keeps increasing. In 1974 and many years before, the Section 5 had just 5 sectional champions. Then they went to the open format in 1975, meaning teams from all schools, regardless of the record, entered sectional play. Now, this open format seemed to work well for a number of years, but I think that time has passed. And now and for the last 10 years, Section 5 has deemed their tournament to have crown champions in 10 classes. Makes no sense. Fewer students, twice as many classes. Again, no doubt there were benefits to having every team get a chance to play in the tournament, regardless of the record. And who knows, upsets happen, right? Well, as not so much, really. As time moved on, significant changes have occurred, most notably the decreasing enrollment. And virtually all schools have two teams now to support and follow with the advancement of the girls' game. And I think it's past time to go back away from the open tournament to a system of earning your way into the tournament, much as we see in the March Madness. And that works pretty well if you watched any college games in the last week. The primary reason I say this is the excessive number of blowouts. I mean blowouts that occur in the first round. And what about the upsets? Well, they're about as common as in the first round mismatches as hitting the lottery. I reviewed early round matchups in each of the 10 classes. It should be noted Class AA has 15 teams in it, while B1 and B2 have just 9 teams. So I reviewed the outcomes of 24 games, several of those classes with at least 12 teams, 1 to 2 games in those classes with 9 or 10 games. The results, there was one upset of all those games, but not really much of one. A 3-16 team defeated a 9-10 team. That's Avoca over Arkport. And then they lost by double digits in their next game. The other 23 games in that first round, anybody want to guess the average margin of loss?
20?
Nearly 30 points per game.
Oh, man.
29.6 per game. Two winless teams, and there were a couple others, included a Romulus team who lost to a mediocre team that they had already been beaten by twice earlier, HAC.
Yeah.
And they only lost in that third matchup, because you know how difficult it is to beat a team three times.
Not Romulus, though.
By 39 points. The other team, Friendship, were that's the name of the school district in Section 5. They were overly friendly. They lost by 66 points. And they didn't play a powerhouse to do that. They lost to a 12-7 team.
By 66?
66 points. I think it was 92-26. I have it written down somewhere. A third winless team kept it closer. Warsaw lost by only 33. Now, I added up the sum of losses and the rare victories by these teams. And the sum of these teams, it comes to an overall record of 80 wins and 414 losses, or a winning percentage of 16%. Mm. And I suspect that a study of the girls' brackets would produce similar results, if not worse, because we know how many blowouts there tend to be. So what is that? I'd like to know, the question I guess for the group and others is, what good does it do anyone, school officials, family and friends, the media, anyone, but especially the individuals on those poor teams, to play these games so they can have more sand kicked in their faces? Mm-hmm. Now, there are alternative solutions. Have standards of earning a sectional berth, not just getting in by having a team. By my count, there were 118 teams in Section 5, divided among the 10 classes. Now, I just pulled this out. It doesn't have to be 5. I mean, I think if you went down to 7 or 8. But if instead we had 5 sectional champions with the top 16 teams from each class qualifying for sectional play, you would add luster to those actually achieving a sectional title. And, moreover, the opportunity of an upset would actually increase in the early round matchups, because even the top-seeded teams would at least be playing a team that has managed more than just a couple of wins in the regular season. And using my math, just over 2/3 of all schools would still qualify for the tournament, 80 out of 118. And for those who don't, we'd only be sparing teams with virtually no chance of winning further pain in an already long season. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when you put the numbers out there, what's the point of playing these early round games?
Well, I think I can point to a very specific situation where people would argue against it, and I look at the Miners Academy girls basketball team, who plays in a very strong girls basketball league. And I think it was 2 years ago, they won 3 regular season games, and they won the sectional finals. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, I think the year that Brittany Anderson was a senior, I think they won 3 regular season games.
Playing in a tough
league.
So
they were allowed to go into sectionals. because with a 3-14 record or 13 record, whatever it was at the time, how many games they played, and they made a run and they won sectionals. And they play in a B and A league, and then they have to go play in C sectional play. So that case alone makes a case for everybody. Now, is that that's very random, that seldomly happens. You could look at Syracuse and what they do, and you have to win 40% of your games to earn a sectional berth. And some coaches are okay with that because if they can't win 40%, then maybe they don't deserve to be in sectional play and they don't go and lose by 35 to 40 to someone. However, if you look at how Syracuse leagues are broken down, they're all broken down by class size. You know, so if you're in a, if you're a B school, yeah, you're good. Traditionally in a B league.
It was a girls' game that kind of spurred me to look this stuff up because I was at home. It was, another cold, wintry night. I planned to go see the South Seneca girls play a home game in the opening round. They play Camp El Savona, which, you know, we're driving these kids up an hour and a half away from Steuben County, I think is where they are, to play a fair South Seneca team. And Camp El Savona was winless, and the score, I think, after one quarter was 26-0. And it's like, how does that help anybody? And again, you could format it. It doesn't have to be five classes. I just think some of these teams, it would be just better for all the way around to restructure it somehow.
I'm sure there's some coaches that would want that. Like, it's tough. You can decline to go to sectionals. You don't have to go. Like, they put an email out. You know, if you'd not – Friendship is an example. We got an email. I'm the league chair in Wayne County now. So we got an email from Jack Perficato and said, Friendship's out of sectionals. You know, please adjust your brackets. And then we got an email like 12 hours later, Friendship's back in sectionals. So, you know, for some of those coaches, you probably get some pressure if they do that. I remember it happened with a football team a couple years ago. They declined to enter sectionals because their kids voted. They let their kids vote on it, and they said they didn't want to go. And then people from the community were like, what are you doing? That's crazy.
And then they went and lost by probably 50.
66.
Yeah,
it was bad. It was bad. But, you know, the only thing with the 40% rule is I think that for some teams they might not challenge themselves as much out of league. You know, like we played Pelmac this year. It's a great game for us. Not to say that I didn't think we were going to win 40% of our games, but I know it happens down in Section 4. Kevin and I, you know, Kurt's talked to me before, Kurt Bastian, he works down in Candor, and he said they're a D school, Candor, and they, with their 40% rule, even if they don't win 40%, they get to go to sectionals because they're D and they play in a C.
Oh, so they have
they play in a C
ways
league.
Around that, so that
yeah, and yeah. You know, really, when you get down to it, there is five class. I mean, there's you win sectionals, but to win your overall class, like when we beat Cal Mom, that was for C of all Section 5.
So in effect, that tournament exists already.
It does, and it's easier. I'm a coach, so I hope they have more classes. It's easier to win the sectional title with more, you know, and there's more. There's a lot of benefits for kids getting to play. But I see your point, especially with those first round games.
What do you think, well, Burke?
I gotta finish my donut. I like letting everybody play. I just think that, you know, you never know. I know there's a ton of blowouts and stuff like that, but I'm still, you know, I don't see. You never know. You know, like Kevin said, you talk about the, you know, the Minders girls, or, you know, it, you don't see it. It's a rarity that, you know, we're a small school playing in a big league. But, you know, you never know. Maybe that team pulls that the upset one time. And
it's a better chance on the girls' side than the boys. I think the boys are pretty.
Yeah, and the problem is you start eliminating teams. I mean, teams are going to be in the – you're going to start in the semifinals if you start getting rid of some of these teams. You know, for one thing, you're going to play two games and win a sectional title.
No. It would be with fewer classes. There would, as it was in the 70s, you had to win four games to win a sectional title, not three as it is now. And usually that first game is a gimme.
Yeah. Well, it
for the top teams.
I mean, now you're talking radical changes. I mean, you're not gonna have C1, C2, and C3.
No. I'm saying drop the classes. It doesn't have to necessarily go from 10 to 5. But
now you're talking in Class C. There might be 30 teams playing for a sectional championship, or in Double A, there's only 12.
Well, they would have to, as other sections have done, they would have to look at that accordingly and come up with a fair plan. I think it's just easier for the officials to go with the status quo right now.
Yeah, it, you know.
And it might be, it might be a little different for the girls' game than the boys' game, too. Because generally speaking, I think the blowouts are even more predominant in the girls' game than the boys. But as we've seen, not entirely.
Well, let me ask you this. In the football side, they have the Connor and Ferris Bowl. Why can't we have like an NIT for the high school? That way these kids can enter the postseason knowing they're not going to win a sectional title, but knowing that they can maybe have two or three games left and win a consolation type of prize.
And that's the idea what Section 5 has decided to do is they want to give more kids more chances, where that's our society. There's more rewards going out. It's easier to obtain things. And you're kind of looking at it back in your day, said, hey, you know, we only had five, and it was a lot harder, and now there's 10. And, I you know, some kids won a sectional title that aren't on a great team. You know, they're on a good team. And the idea of Section 5 doing that is basis to give more sectional awards out to teams and coaches and communities. And that's their thought process. Now, on the opposite end is maybe let's make it a little bit harder for the kids. Let's make them earn it. And I understand what you're saying. And Jim, you know, like the Connor Ferris in football, it's a great point, because what that would do is now allow some teams to maybe compete in a game or two postseason rather than going and losing by 50 points and scoring 18 points in a game, which is kind of embarrassing for parents and kids and communities. But
right.
Well, I think it's taken some of the luster off as well. And I remember or wonder what if the attendance would actually be revived. I mean, when you made a sectional final in past years with fewer classes, it was a huge deal. It's still a big deal, but it was a huge deal to go to these bigger arenas and play those games.
Can I ask Zach a question?
Sure.
Any luster lost in Lions for the sectional championship this year?
No.
Community still excited?
We had more people at the game yesterday than I've seen in a long time. And it was in Rush Henry out on a Saturday.
And there's going to be that debate by assistant coach Dean Schott probably saying, hey, when we won sectionals and we won states, it was a lot harder to do. Well, do I agree with that? Yep. But it's still a banner on the wall. You know what I mean?
Well, he said yesterday, I might know, but there was an exciting thing, I know, at that Lions game, and they shifted to the crowd to show that, too.
Oh, yeah, one of the players had a relative fall ill. Is that what you're talking about?
No, the big fight. Wasn't that?
Oh, that was it, the Blue Cross, yeah, towards the end of the Lions game. And actually, I thought that gave RCMCS a little chance to come. It kind of changed things a little bit at the end. It was about a minute and a half left. There was a big brawl in the Blue Cross stands, not involving any people associated with the schools either. But, well, I guess, you know, this might be a good chance to segue away from that because we're probably not going to come up with any consensus here. But
I think a bigger issue is just dealing with all the charter schools and private schools and
yes.
all that kind of stuff. You know, that's what really bothers me, you know. Cause
Zach didn't have any problem with any of these guys.
No, I know.
How many colleges did you beat, Zach, this postseason? Middle, early, late, Northwest?
But, it, you know, and I probably talked about it before. You look at, you know, I remember 6-7 years ago, Miners had some good teams. They played Bishop Kearney 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And, you know, was that Miners team any worse than, you know, who, you know, maybe when I played, if, you know, Bishop Kearney, we had to play them in sectionals, they might have beat us. We never, you know, go on to win the state championship.
I give Section 5 some credit, though. Look where Kearney is now. They've made changes the last 10 years. The problem with the charter school is it's publicly funded. It's a public school. So, you know, it's not a private school. It's, you know, they just really don't know what to do with them, to be honest. You know, I've had conversations with some people on the committee, and they just, well, they're this. In Section 5, they can selectively classify some of those teams. Like I was told a couple days ago that RCMCS is going to B next year.
And leadership going to move up too?
I'm not sure about leadership.
Because nobody had a chance in B this year. Let's face it. Leadership was clearly way above anybody
and
else.
And then, you know, but you move RCMCS to B, and now the B schools are kind of screwed. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's no, obviously it helps the C schools, but, you know, Miners is B next year, and they could play RCMCS in the semis and. You know what I mean?
It's a frustrating thing for communities. You spend, these kids start playing basketball in first, second grade, and you watch them, and if I use my son for an example now, or my daughter, you know, these girls are together and boys are together forever, and there's nobody really transferring in or transferring out. And then all of a sudden, Miners next year, these kids have been playing together their whole lives, and, you know, you did add the mean kid on both teams for Miners, you know, but that was a move, you know, and sometimes that happens in your benefit, sometimes it happens as your loss, but it doesn't happen every single year. And you go up, and now all of a sudden you got a shot at winning sectionals, but there's leadership sitting there, and where their kids aren't coming from the same neighborhoods in Rochester. They're coming from a gigantic city.
Well, those schools don't even, in many cases, don't even exist after a few years. South Seneca, under Steve Eder, had an awesome team that won the sectionals in 2001, and they raced through the regular season and the sectionals and played a team called Buffalo Traditional. And they gave Traditional fits, but these guys had major college players on their roster. And that school no longer exists. And I think that may be the case with a lot of these other schools in 10 years from now.
RCMCS didn't have a senior on their team because they've only been around for 3 years. So it is different.
And looking at sectional titles, like in Class B this year in the boys, there's B1 and B2. But the girls don't have enough schools. They didn't have to break it up. So there's 17 schools.
Next year there's only two Cs. Because
really?
a couple schools dropped to D. A
couple went up.
A couple are up. So it just depends on the numbers. So it'll be like my first 2 years coaching at Lions, we had two. It was C1 and C2. It was big. It was
so like, if the numbers, I don't know how it works out, but next year, say leadership was a B and the boys lost a couple schools in Bs, it could be one Class B and Niners is playing leadership. It just depends. Sometimes it's better, there's two extra teams on the boys' side, so they have to split B1, B2.
Yeah.
And now now the B2's got such a greater chance to win sectionals than they would if they're together.
Yeah, so timing, is a big part of it, too. When your high school career is, depending on how these sectional break influences your chance to say you were a sectional title and put a banner in your gym.
Our junior year, we lost to Livonia. I think it's the only time in the history of Livonia they're a Class C school. You look back, Livonia won sectional championships Class A, and then, they're just number-wise, obviously, they're a public school, and they dropped a C 1 year, and they went to the state finals. But if they're not in Class C,
maybe
we probably,
in that
we'd probably hang another banner,
Well, one other thing, and I'm really glad you brought that charter school thing up, Matt, but Section 5 boys basketball historically has been the best-run section in the state. For years, felt so good about that. And as a matter of fact, and I hope this has changed somewhat, that on those enjoyable but somewhat rare occasions where we got to cover teams that advanced to the states, the organization on the state level could not compare to how well and how personable and engaging the officials of Section 5 were during the years I covered so many games.
Yeah, I think that continues on, except for the fact they won't let us stream their games live in the postseason. But other than that,
they do a nice job, like the banquet. They have the one seed banquet. No other section has that. They have a finalist bruncheon that's really, really nice for the kids. Not on any of the other classes.
So many
sections
great.
Have that. So they do a nice job. Yeah, for sure.
Section 5 football, however, was a different story.
So, trying to figure where we're going here next. Well, let's transition over. Let's talk about the two teams that had the most success in the postseason. First of all, congratulations to Jerry Anderson's Minders, Lady Blue Devils, winning sectionals, going on to states, and really enjoyable team to watch. I know that we've all seen them play a few times this year, and congratulations to Cassidy Rattray. She was kind of the senior leader. It was fun to see Divya Tiwari really emerge as the season went on. Madison Hillmeyer is just an outstanding, fun player to watch. She's just got a motor that kind of never stops. And they got a freshman, Heidi Miller, who is outstanding, and she's going to make sure the Minders is there, going forward. And, of course, another freshman, HBT, right, Hannah Brown-Trice. And Megan Mean, she was on Romulus, the state championship team last year. And
don't forget about Allie Deal.
Yep, Allie Deal. Who else am I forgetting? I don't want to forget anybody.
Now they bring some other kids off the bench.
Yeah.
Manny Hillmeyer.
Yeah, we got her.
And but yeah, they do bring some kids off the bench and Tilton. And, and it depends on the game, too, and what I think Coach Anderson needs. But
talk a little bit about Jerry Anderson. I mean, what a great job he's done. And they're such a fun team to watch. And the program that was kind of – it seems like they're kind of emerged back now.
You always hear the coach, or the media talk about coaches and, can he coach? Do the kids play how he coaches, or do the kids play how he played? And Dave, you can speak to it. You covered a lot of our games in high school, and that's who Jerry was. Jerry would run through a wall. Jerry would play hard defense. You know, he was intimidated by no one. He was doing the intimidation. And you really saw that team this year take on that personality of Coach Anderson and the fact that they would run up and down. They would be in your face. Their man-to-man defense was outstanding. They helped each other out. They rebounded. We went up and watched the qualifying game, the C qualifier, and every shot was one and done. You know, one and done, and they weren't necessarily the bigger team, but they just had a big heart, and they played hard and truly rode the personality of Coach Anderson. He's done a great job of turning that program back into a league powerhouse. You know, even when Coach Best's last year, they won it with the three wins. You know, they always competed in Class C. But, you know, Jerry, I think, has made this formidable. And, listen, players help him, too. Cassie Rattray was outstanding. And yep. Heidi Miller is great in the post. But those kids bought into what he's doing. And he's doing it like he played it.
So, yeah, an outstanding season. And he was a teammate of you and Virk in 92 when you guys won the state championship. Of course, we talk about that all the time. Later in the show, we might even talk about how your team would have fared against this Lions team. But we always focus on you guys, 92. But over here, this guy was had a pretty good team in South Seneca. And let's see if we can pull this up from the archive here.
There he is.
You know who that is? It's not Patrick Swayze. It's not. It's that's Dave Barnick.
Adam West.
Yeah. I don't even think you look so much like him.
Not like Batman then, yeah.
And we got a shot of the whole team there too, Dave. But talk about that team that you played on real quick.
We had an awesome team and an awesome run. We were good enough that we started our second string twice that year because we'd thrashed a couple of league opponents so badly the first time around.
Dave, is that the 45 or 46 team?
I'm just glad it was 1970 because 70s don't sound quite as bad as 60s, but it was 69-70. And we scored, this was before the three-point shot. We averaged 80 points a game and scored over 100 three times, and we're the only Jack Guinan-coached team in that sectional run of five championships in a row that did not have a close sectional game, and you had to win four games to win the sectionals, and I wish we'd had obviously the state playoffs then. A couple really very good players. One was the athletic director's son. He's the second player from the right going towards your left there, Bobby Rich, who played, set a lot of scoring records in Oswego and went and played in Sweden primarily. And the guy to my right there, Bob Wilson, was about 6'4 or so, but he had arms like a guy about 6'8. And boy, when he pressed the inbounder, he created so many steals. Anyway.
I think you were the captain there holding the ball there.
Yeah, Captain Dave. And it was, they were good times. Yeah, it was fun. I got to play at the War Memorial five times in 3 years.
Well, I didn't know they built it then.
It was the Rochester War Memorial, not the corporate.
Used to be able
signature.
To, like, my dad told me stories. You could, like, people were smoking and on the outside during the middle of the games, and it was kind of a little different atmosphere than it was.
Probably. Well, the smoking. One other just eventful thing. We're going to our locker room at halftime of a game, and a bunch of young kids were passing us in that archaic hallway as we go to the locker rooms. I don't know if they've improved them over the years or not, but they're all, hey, how you doing? Anyway, we were robbed. They'd broken into our locker room and pilfered through all the pockets. Fortunately, there weren't cell phones then, but right. What money we had was gone. Well, those were good times.
Sounds great.
And we did have a legendary coach, really. Jack Guinan was a tremendous coach. The games were easy compared to his practices. They'd have child services down there today if he ran practices like that. But, you know, going back, and that was nice of you to do that, Jim, but when Kevin was talking about the Minders girls, and I saw this in the Lions boys too, one aspect that I think there has to be more today than ever is some joy. And you see some teams are so wound up, so tight, they're afraid to make a mistake because, you know, and I think the way a coach's philosophy, you have to measure that discipline. But there has to be some joy, and you saw that in the Miners girls and the Lions boys, not only you saw it, but you see it. Because, well, especially with Lions, obviously, they're still playing.
Yeah, and it was fun on Canandaigua to see both fans support the other ones in that doubleheader. You know, the Lions players were with the Minders students when the Minders girls were playing, and then after when Lions played, a lot of people from Seneca Falls still there supporting Lions because they're pretty close together. And those games in Canandaigua were just fantastic.
And I think, speaking to that, when you're sitting there as a Seneca Falls fans, and all of a sudden the Lions come in and they go right to the blue crew, the student section.
Yeah.
And that kind of picks your spirits up and makes you feel good about Lions. So, and then you watch Lions play, and I looked around and I saw all these Minders fans really, really clapping and rooting for the Lions kids, and didn't even know them, but they just shared that one commonality of being, you know, 10, 12, 20 miles down the road from each other. That, you know, but I thought it was a great thing, and I don't know who, Zach, if you said to the kids go up or they just kind of went up on their own. I mean, you got some crazy characters.
I gave them a little advice. I said, look it, the Cal Mom's bringing the whole town. I said, you know, Seneca Falls people are going to be there. You know, I know a lot of people in Seneca Falls, and you know some of the kids, we scrimmaged them, and some of the boys, you know, that were there.
Sure.
And so I said, there's no place else to sit. I go, why don't you go up there and cheer with them? And they were like, just like a girls' game, right? And I said, yeah, stand up, do whatever you want, have fun. You know, this is a sectional, you know, qualifier game, excuse me. And then the kids were like jumping up and down, and I was like, not too much, boys, you know, but they had fun with it.
Yeah, it was special. It really was nice to see.
So let's now focus on this Lions team because obviously Zach being such good friends with us and always helping us, you know, he's been up in the studio at least a dozen times. We kind of root for those teams a little bit, maybe secretly. but
I don't think there's any secret about it.
But, you know, right off the bat, Cuba Rushford comes to the Atwood and they're a good team. You know, they were a very good team, I thought. And it was a pretty close game right down into the second half before you guys pulled away. And then after that, Wheatland Chi-Lai, then a charter school, RCMCS, and then another charter school, Early College, a team that beat ER in the finals. And then Cal Mum, another difficult team, and then another charter school from Buffalo, Middle Early College. I mean, this has been – it's not like you guys have just waltzed through. I guess looking back, it seems like, oh, yeah, win, 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 win. But, man, that is a tough gauntlet to go through, and you guys are still alive. It's got to feel great.
It does. It does. It was kind of like, you know, I tried to tell the kids, you know, we always talk about March Madness and NCAA tournament. And you win Saturday, come in Sunday, you play Monday. You win Monday, come in Tuesday, kids were beat. You know, you play what? It was a grind.
Five
a
games
grind.
In 8 days?
Something like that, yeah.
I would like to ask Zach, too, what were your greatest challenges, especially, and I don't mean your opponents, but your greatest challenges in constructing, keeping your team together, the personality of this year's team?
Throughout the year?
Yes.
Yeah, we had some issues with some kids being selfish at times, you know, a couple guys deciding to leave the team or be dismissed from the team, and, you know, we just... After we lost to North Rose the last time, you know, we kind of imploded. We imploded. Like, it was ugly in the second half. And we didn't get a couple calls. And, you know, we just talked about you got to put that behind you. You know, life lessons. You know, you got to move on. But we just really have gelled here down this stretch. And the kids like each other.
That's important.
And, you know, I've tried to do some things where we're doing, you know, outside of basketball where we're together. And I don't know if it's helped or not, but it certainly hasn't hurt. But I just think, you know, if you look back when we won it a couple years ago, we might have had more talent 2 years ago. But this group just, they play well together. They enjoy each other's company. You know, it's just been fun. I don't really know if I've done anything like super different during the year to get them to play this way. But I hope they keep playing like it for another weekend.
Well, for one, Zach, Damon Hunter's kind of shifted into another gear for this postseason. 30 points every single game this postseason. And he's also generally throwing in around 8-9 rebounds to 7-8 assists each one of these games, too. He's just been phenomenal. I mean, amazing.
He is a competitor. You know, I think if you're playing checkers with him, he would. If he lost, he would. he'd get upset. He does not like to lose.
Get a technical foul on the checkerboards.
He's been good with his technical fouls.
He has been. He's been great.
He's been very good since early in the year. He's been close a couple times, but he's been good. He's willed us a couple games, you know. I mean, early college was the most impressive I've ever seen him. I mean,
40 points.
40 points, and they were all over him, doubling him everywhere. And he's a fantastic player. You know, I'm happy for his success. And he's, most importantly, he's playing the right way. Like, he's not going out jacking 40 or 45 times a game. But he spreads it out. He's just – even yesterday, I mean, he misses the free throw, and then he comes up with a rebound through three guys.
Both bigger than him,
and then he made the two. So he's just a
he's got a will to win.
He does.
One of those kids where you look at and do you call him a great player or is he a very good player? But his will to win is outstanding, and that's kind of where he's changed his personality a little bit. He's changed his style of play because he really is like putting the community on his back and saying I want to bring this home. And there's complimentary players, too, not to take away from other guys.
Yeah, we'll talk about all those guys in a second.
Buskirk and Farah and PA and, you got different guys coming in different games and doing well for you. You can't win it with one kid. You certainly can't. But when it gets down to the fourth quarter and it gets down to crunch time, it's great to have a kid that wants to win so bad.
And what's amazing, too, you got this 140-pound, 5'10 kid, skinny kid out there, and he'll take it into the lane, get sometimes like a pinball, bounce between two of the big trees, and then throw it up there, and it'll roll right in, he can take the contact.
You can tell that from his passing. If you walked just into the Wheatland-Chilai game, I'll use for an example, they had the Roberts brothers that were both, it looked like they spent hours in the weight room, strong as could be. Caught, molded, and then you got Tippy, skinny legs, his Pistol Pete build, and he'll take a pass from three-quarter court and put it on a line and a dime, and there's no lob to it. There's some speed and muscle there, and it's just, it's deceiving. It really is.
Yeah, he's, super quick, obviously. But not only Damon Hunter has helped this team win, I think one of the most underrated guys maybe in your league, Zach, is Nick Farah. I mean, he's just a horse. He's undersized in his position against everybody else he's playing with, but he's, coming down with key rebounds. He's drawing defensive assignments against guys 4 or 5 inches taller than him, and he just gets it done.
He's a glue guy.
Yeah,
he's perfect. Definition of him. He does some of the little things that you don't see on the stat sheet. And Nick does not like games where it's a blowout. He'll flat out told me one game, he's like, I don't even want to play in the second half. He doesn't like those types of games, like the first round games you were talking about.
Yeah.
On our senior night, we were up a lot, and he was like, play one of these kids. This is not that big of a deal to me. So he likes the competition, and he's really turned it on from an intensity level. He gets a little wacko sometimes during the game, but
that's a fair thing.
Sometimes you need that, and He's a good kid. For a kid that didn't play basketball his freshman year, I'm certainly glad I finally talked him into playing his sophomore year because he's more of a – baseball is his true love. Mm. He's a very good football player, but he's turned out to be obviously a key component to our team.
Tough as nails, too.
Real tough kid.
Tough as nails.
Real tough kid. Won't back down. And I think yesterday that was really important for our kids. We beat Cal Mom, great game. So on Thursday we didn't even practice, but I brought the kids in to show them the tape. And the Foster boy, number 11, the big, 6'6 kid from Buffalo, he dunked in the second quarter. And three of my kids were like, Mr. Young, can you rewind that so we can watch it again? But, we weren't scared. And Nick, I think, is a part of that. He's just not intimidated at all. And that was huge for us yesterday.
And then a couple of great guards. They almost seem interchangeable in a way between Van Buskirk and McDonald. They're always hitting timely key threes. And a matter of fact, in the finals in the Blue Cross, your team got off to a slow start, and RCMCS hit, I think, 5 or 6 threes in the first quarter. It was unbelievable. They scored 29 first quarter points, and the only reason I think that you guys stayed within reach was 2 key Van Buskirk threes.
Yeah, they've kind of been switching roles each game. It'll be Adam or Hot, and DeAndre's not.
Yesterday it was
DeAndre versus early college. It was DeAndre versus Cal Mom. It was Adam. So, Junior's kind of blossoming, and it's something that you need. They've got a full year under their belt, Yeah. But certainly we need some guys to come in and hit some shots. And Josh Desain, he hit one yesterday. He hit one versus Cal Mom.
He's slumping a little, but it was nice to see him bury a few yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, he's hit some. And even some kids, you know, that, you know, Zach Wonder, you know, he didn't get in yesterday. But versus Early College was a huge component of the game. Came in, helped us break pressure. And, you know, the big fella, Big Jordan yesterday, I was really happy for him. Jordan's a great kid.
Yeah, let's talk about the big guys. You're two-headed center. It's mostly PA, and then Amel, with only 9 minutes, had 6 points yesterday. But both those guys, Amel's really, I think, improved. He's got nice soft hands. You know, I think he'll do great in his senior year. And then, of course, the big teddy bear, Chris PA, is probably the biggest beneficiary of Damon Hunter's bullet passes down on the block.
Yeah, Chris has had some good games. You know, I didn't think yesterday was his best game, but you're also playing against 6'6 kid that is super athletic. But Jordan came in and gave us some great minutes yesterday. And, you know, we just got that mix where, you know, depending on who we play, we can play, you know, we can kind of adjust. We have, you know, Jordan, if we have to play zone, is a good big man for us. And if we have to play man, I can bring in Nick Kehoe, you know, to help. So we have, you know, I have 10 guys that I feel comfortable putting into the game at any point.
It's important to get this far and being able to manage all 10 of those guys, you know, as a coach, because some games one kid might play a lot, and then the next game you might, you know, you might need something else, and managing that, and those kids got to feel that, hey, this is a total team effort.
And I saw that yesterday too. You know, there was it's tough. It's I think it's a little easier for them in sectionals during the regular season. You know, sometimes you'd see a little. You know, certainly. The kids should be, you know, they want, everyone wants to play, but it's, you know, it's not baseball, it's not football. You can only play five guys. Yeah. But I've seen it more on this run. You know, kid only plays 2 minutes, but they're still jumping all, you know, over each other at the end, and that's a big part of team chemistry right now too.
Sure, I want to spend just a minute actually on Zach, because you know, great coaches, as he's just done, deflect praise to the players, but. And I remember at the Red Creek game how calm his demeanor was, although I think your wife said you percolate pretty good on the inside. But who were your greatest influences that you took your style and methods from to develop as the coach you've become, which is obviously outstanding?
Well, I student taught under Ron Cervolo, and, you know, just his passion and, you know, details and the way he ran his program, I thought I learned a lot that year.
Red sweatshirts, red face.
Yeah, and Bob Pavrilla, who's the newer coach now. You know, I was actually his assistant on JV. Bobby's not the calmest guy, but certainly the passion for both of those guys, you know, and they bleed Newark. You know, they're really into their program, and it was a great year being over there. And then I coached with Jeff Panik for a couple years at Midlakes, and again, same type of passion and commitment to details. And you know, I think when I came to Lions, I was a little wilder, and I think I saw it when I saw Steve coach and just having conversations with Steve Eater. You know, he was kind of a different method of connecting, you know, not to say that Steve's not passionate, but I just saw the way he was kind of calm, cool, and collected. And I think as you get a little older, you know, yelling and screaming at your kids all the time isn't always effective. There's a time and a place for it, you know, but
my kids
put enough pressure on themselves this year that I try not to, you know, I know this group wants to win. So, I try to be as calm as I can so that the kids can kind of also keep their poise during the game. So that's kind of
how about before
it.
You actually coached, who were some influences in the game? Who did you look up to growing up playing ball?
You know, I just went to all games all the time. Waterloo, you know, Coach Pizzotto was my coach, and you know, my dad was always involved at a young age, and, you know, youth hoop all the way up. And, you know, Kevin was actually—I don't want to make Kevin feel old—but he was an assistant coach 1 year for me when I was in high school. And you know, I used to love even talking with him and Coach Patchen, Timmy Patchen. We would just like talk box scores and stuff. And Tim Patchen's like, nobody else does this, you know. So I'd always would like, I just always followed it, you know, compared to. Some of my players, but you know, I used to grow up going to the Waterloo Miners games and you know, just going.
Did Waterloo ever win any of those games?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just kidding.
Yes.
Just kidding.
A couple. I know it's been a rough stretch.
Well, but real quick, I didn't want to stop talking about this Lions team without mentioning Darren Carswell, sophomore call up midway through the season. And, you know, I don't know if you guys are where you are without him. He's just an incredible defensive player. He had 5 points in about 20 seconds early yesterday to kind of – and when you're playing against a team like, you know, middle-early college, I think you need people to step up and say, hey, look what I just did. We can beat these guys.
Darren is a physical presence. And, you know, you see it when he walks onto the court. He's just a muscular kid, athletic, and great individual, great kid at school. All his teachers love him. Except he talks a little too much in his class sometimes, but it's good talk. Yeah. He's brought that, you know, defensive presence to us. And the last couple games, he scored the ball. You know, I think he got some confidence versus Cal Mom. He struggled a little bit versus early college and RCMCS, and he made a bucket early versus Cal Mom. And you just saw him, you know, yesterday took it right to the basket early on, and then he got a couple fouls. He couldn't play as much in the second quarter, but. Yeah, for sure.
Virk, you know, your dad coached at Lions, and Zach's now kind of in the line of a great string of Lions coaches and a great program. Just talk a little bit about kind of how he's positioned himself in that history.
Hey, done great, you know, two sectional titles and moving on in the States here. You know, if you look through their history, you've gone back from, you know, Coach Blackwell on, who coached Jim Boeheim, and then, you know, my dad had a nice run. He didn't stick around too long. I think he coached 7 or 8 years. And, you know, then Coach Schott put in, I don't know, 20-plus years, I think, you know, 9 sectional titles, followed by Steve Veeder for a few years and won a sectional title. Now, you know, Zach, what's this year, 4th or 5th year?
6th year.
6th year, you know, 6th year, 2 sectional titles, and got them back in the States. I think it's their first time going there since, what, like 97?
Yeah.
Since 97 back to Glens Falls. So, you know, the tradition continues. They've done a nice job of getting guys in there who can coach basketball, you know, and I think that's a tribute to the school district and, you know, to that community. I grew up obviously going to Lions games as a kid, and a lot of tradition, and, you know, you see this kind of, it just continues, you know, the kids always play hard, and no matter what, they seem to always be able to put 5 guys out there who can play some ball.
So, real quick, let's take a look at the leagues next year. You know, let's start, I guess, in Wayne County. You know, Damon, Tippy Hunter are going to be gone next year, but a lot of great juniors Lions brings back. North Rose Woolcott's going to be outstanding next year. Tyler Norris will be a junior. Garrett Hoyt will be a senior. They lose Stevenson, but a lot of complimentary players coming up in that program. I don't think you're going to see Red Creek fall right off the map when Jake Slobe goes away either, because they got Willie Meyer in the middle. They got the younger Klein brothers going to remain in the point. And ER's got a lot of coming back. I mean, Zach, how about for your league next year?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really thought about next year.
Don't worry about next week.
ER North Rose will be good. You know, we'll be okay.
Zach hadn't wanted to announce his retirement until after the.
Derek Chance, you know, will be a sophomore. I think he's going to be the next great player in Wayne County. Whether that'll happen next year or the year after that, he certainly was exciting to watch this year as a freshman. And then in the Finger Lakes East, Minders is going to be very good. They do lose Liam Carraher and Ryan Major, but everybody else is coming back and the best JV team in the league. They're going to be outstanding.
And I don't know how much help they'll get from that JV team. You know, I mean, you've got so many underclassmen already on varsity.
They might push some of these starters, you know. Guys like Devin Verkey and, you know, some of the other big guys, you know, are going to have to work hard in the off season. Otherwise, some of these sophomores will push them. I mean, I don't think in that program right now any position, starting position, is guaranteed at this point.
Sure. You know, but that's, you know, how many sophomores can you have on one team that can't play?
Yeah. And then Waterloo, they lose Nate Barnes and Jonathan Jones, and they bring back Ben Deming, who may be the preseason player of the year in all the Wayne Finger Lakes. And Jeff Panik resigned as coach after I thought he did a fantastic job this year with that group. And so we don't know who's going to be coaching that group yet, but I think Waterloo will be good in the East. Obviously, Minders. Tyler Collins and Shamar Logan's, what a big loss for Newark. But last year we talked about Micah Wright and Jamie Rosser, and they have a 6'7" or 6'8" freshman this year. He'll be a junior next year. Taylor Clements and Nate Beard, the sharp kid, Jose Santel, I think is going to emerge.
I think Newark.
Yeah, so they'll be good, too.
Newark drops down to B for sectional play, too, yep. I've been told. So you know, that's big for them because they usually struggle in A's. They've had some great teams over the last couple of years and haven't even made it to the finals. Yeah. And now next year they go into the B's, and it'll be Newark, I think, in leadership competing mm-hmm. for a title there.
And then out in the West, the Finger Lakes West, Naples, after going undefeated through the regular season, they do lose quite a bit. But they still have some talent coming back. And Marcus Whitman, I think, might be the team to beat in the West next year. They have their two big guys, Brad Stone and Gavin McComiskey, coming back. They're probably the biggest 1-2 tandem in all the Wayne Finger Lakes.
If they're still in the West.
Oh, they might come back to the East?
They're Class B school.
Yeah, they're the only B school, everything, everybody else out there.
I'm not sure how that works, like if they get to pick or not, but...
They left a few years ago because they were struggling so much.
Right,
you know?
And they had to apply to go there. It was like a hardship thing.
I think it's like every year they have to kind of...
Review it, huh?
I mean, they went to the semis of B this year. I would think maybe it's time to move them back.
Might be a good move for them to prepare them for sectionals a little bit better. I mean, do they want to win league championships in the West, or they want to try and prepare for... sectionals in
Dundee, also in the West, always good. Les Miller squad, and
they have a very
South
good
Seneca. You know, Lincoln Backman Lowe in his senior year should be better. Romulus also head coach Kyle Collinsworth resigned after two seasons at the helm, where they actually three if you count the merge season. So we'll see. You know, I think we're kind of pulling for Joe Pisnak to get that job. He was the JV coach. I think he's the right guy to help them get back to where they used to be in terms of basketball. So, it'll be here before you know it. We'll be lining up our schedule. And I got to thank all the athletic directors and coaches this year that helped us do what we do. It's an inconvenience for them when we come to their gym. You know, we require more than a radio station. We have staff of five. Even the janitorial staffs usually have to wait late for us, you know, to clean up our stuff before they can get out of there. So we really appreciate that. And everybody, for the most part, is super accommodating and excited to have us there. So, I can't wait to put the season together or the schedule together for next season. How about memories from this season? One big memory, Dave. What stands out?
Well, games I didn't watch, but actually it has to be the Lions team.
Sure.
And I do want to give kudos to the improvement at Waterloo.
Yep.
Which really has been a two-year process, I think.
Yep.
And I think they should our team to be reckoned with next year. So.
Okay. You guys, Zach, I'm not going to mention you because we know what your answer is, but Corsi.
Oh, real quick on it. You know, I remember from the Finger Lakes One crew watching you guys call the Palmac Waterloo game. You know, I pay a little bit more attention to Waterloo because I coached over there and teach there. And, you know, that overtime win Waterloo had was pretty sweet as far as viewing. And then probably my highlight of the two highlights of the year would be early on in the season, you know, watching those showcase games with Newark and Livonia and Victor and Palmac and the Geneva Wilson game. That was a lot of fun. But I think the most fun I had, and we didn't really do it live, was the Lions Wheatland game, you know, and just Lions kind of sparking. You know, we did the Cuba Rushford game, and they were good, you know, and then they go on, and then you go do the Naples night, and they lose to RCMCS, and then, you know, Lions in a game that they look.
Just
they,
being
they,
in the gym that night with all the semifinals in Class C across the whole region, and then the atmosphere in Bloomfield. That's probably one of my best memories, too, was that night.
Yeah, it's really, for me, you know, I was really involved about 5-6 years ago when I was the varsity coach at Waterloo, and you knew everybody, and you kind of went and watched like Zach does, and you go support other schools, and you really get into it. And this year is the first, the most connected I feel like I've been, you know, with watching Naples and South Seneca and Livonia and Victor, just all these teams, and, you know, really, really watching, you know, that last night. I think it was the last night I called with the Naples and the Lions and Lions beating Wheatland Chilai. You know, I've watched Lions since then, but I haven't called them. Yeah. And, you know, I've kind of, you know, it's my second favorite team here coming down the stretch.
We had a lot of fun that night in Bloomfield, boy. Yeah. Voices were a little hoarse for a couple of days. Virk, what about you? Virk and I had started this thing 4 years ago. We did a podcast, and, you know, obviously you brought a lot of clout to what we were doing. I'm just a guy. You're you know, a record holder, a state champ, and a former D1 player. So I got to thank you for, you know, taking part early on and helping us get this off the ground. And, you know, it's kind of amazing kind of what it's grown to, huh, Virk? From just us two sitting and doing three games and then sitting over in that corner doing an audio podcast.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, we start off kind of combining it with the Syracuse podcast and stuff like that. And then, you know, over the years, you know, you've obviously taken the lead and, you know, gone from 3 to 10 to 15 to 28 games now or whatever it might be. But, you know, highlights from this year, you know, obviously Lions run, you know, I just think that's an incredible run, you know, for Coach Young and, you know, and the run that, you know, Damon Hunter and that team's had has been fun to watch, the games that I've been able to go to. You know, I thought that Cal Mum Lions game was one of the better high school games that I've seen, just the atmosphere there kind of, you know, that's what high school basketball is all about. I thought, you know, two communities with great crowds and, you know, just a well-played and well-coached game that, you know, I had a lot of fun watching that game. And the Miners girls, obviously, would be the other story. You know, a team that's kind of been beaten up in the league, but, you know, the being able to make great runs and sectionals and, you know, winning it 2 years ago, then, you know, Jerry led them to the finals this year and, you know, on the states or finals last year and then into the state tournament this year. So a nice run for him. And, you know, I think that will make things a lot easier for him in the future as far as, you know, now he's got some credibility. And, you know, everybody knows what he can do. And, you know, I think a lot of the community's excited, you know, for things to come, I think, on that side. And but it's been fun calling all the games and getting out and seeing some of these high school players play.
And for me, it's kind of amazing because I think the quality of the product that we're putting out there is so much better than I maybe hoped it could be even a few years ago. And I think it's because so many great members of our team who have a passion for it, both on the broadcast side, between you guys, Mike Alessio came on board, and, you know, he's just like a little kid almost. You know, he's so excited with some of the stuff that goes on at these games, and so that gets everybody excited. And everybody's kind of proud of what we're doing, and we're recognized sometimes as we go around these gyms. You know, people say, oh, look, Finger Lakes One is here. That's that guy. That's that guy from the podcast.
My kids ask me, you know, there's some of it, even my kids at the elementary school were like, hey, I saw, you know, you were on the podcast the other night. And I was like, you guys watch that? And they're like, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, and our viewership is way up this year. I haven't done the final numbers, but just a conservative estimate has us over like 90,000 total views this season, which is pretty impressive. And not only our broadcast team, but my producer to the left here, Jeremy Hunt, a huge part of this since the beginning. Shares that same passion and gets excited. You know, we drive home from the games and say, can you believe that thing that happened, you know? And, oh, I can't wait to watch that on the replay and see if we got a good shot of that. Jason Hunt, his brother, coming on board this year, helping out a lot, brings that same type of passion. And Dennis Leahy helped out this year on some camera work, and he had a lot of fun. He's a former Final Four. He went to the Final Four in Glens Falls, actually, playing for a charter school in the Southern Tier. Or private school, maybe not charter school.
Right.
So that to me has been just super excited. And I think that we also started to get more interest from sponsors this year. And so if the sponsors support us more next year, we'll do more games. I honestly think that we could do 35 or 40 games if the financing was there. So, you know, if you are interested, send us an email, contact@fingerlakes1.com. Give us a call, 315-712-0104, because everything we do, there's some expense involved each one of these games that we go do. And the more sponsors we get, we're generally putting 100% back in. That's what it was this year. I shared the budget with everybody, and we did as many games as we possibly could, and it ended up being plus some. I think the budget was for like maybe 24 or 25, and we ended up doing 27.
Before we go to that 40-game schedule, you might want to clear that with your wife, Jim.
She's behind it. She's a big fan, Burke. You know,
she's probably watching right now.
Absolutely. But
two things I want to highlight, and you are the catalyst, quite obviously, for all of this. And the preparation, Jim, that you do is marvelous in setups, arrangements, organization, roster information. So obviously it's been your dream, your goal, and you're the one who are realizing it and deserve lots of credit for that. And the other thing that I want to point out, which is especially gratifying to me, is I had such joy broadcasting different teams. And I remember a nice kind article that was done on the broadcasting team back many years ago. My favorite team was the Minders state championship team, and to see, quite frankly, how great you guys have turned out, and now the joy you're experiencing with your own kids on that level. It's nice to be a part of that for me.
And it is kind of strange, isn't it? One day, you know, several 30 years ago, you're sitting there calling Matt Verkey's basketball 20. Games on the radio.
By the way,
and now you guys sit together.
When you referred to South Seneca earlier, I think we defeated Hickory High in the semifinals that year.
Well, maybe we should wrap it up here, not just for the show, but for the season. But stay tuned. We're going to run the credits. And then after the credits, you're going to see, a One Shining Moment-esque video montage of the season that I think you'll all really enjoy. So, Zach, good luck rest of the way. I mean, no matter what happens, it's been a fantastic season. I'm so happy that you get to get your kids up there and go experience that Final Four in Glens Falls. It's amazing. So happy for your kids, and good luck against Waterville, right?
Yes, Waterville, number one in the state, undefeated.
Yep. Yeah, well, hey, you know what? There's a lot of people that said, early college is going to kill Lions.
Anybody who's listening who wants to donate a little money for our trip can email Steve Eater, too. Just put that plug in for anybody out there.
Yeah, honestly, there is some expense there. Yeah, so anybody out there listening that wants to support the Lions,
Kevin told me earlier he's going to come up a little money for you, Zach. So.
Yeah, that's very nice of him. He's a good
he's going to donate our proceeds from this show, actually.
The donuts.
The donuts.
So I guess we'll put a wrap on this thing, but stick around for this video. I really like it. Again, four times it made me almost cry. Four.
And Jim spent hours and hours doing this video.
It was longer than it should have taken.
For everybody out there, they should really appreciate it.
When you get 27 games of footage, you can really do some things that you couldn't do.
I was telling Jim I used to make a highlight video for my team when I played every year, and I would showcase the seniors, and that would take me 12 to 16, 20 hours, of extra time. But it was worth it. It gives the kids a great memory, and as well as this video that Jim's about to show Will. And Jim, I always get a lot of questions about the show and everything and how we do it. But how many people, watch a certain game, on average? So by the time a week or two has gone by, maybe, live viewership, we know is anywhere from 200 to 400. But can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we'll do a game. Like, I went back and kind of updated all the viewership for all the games that happened over the winter. And every single one of those games, like a game that we did in January, when maybe I last looked at the stats the week after the game, has an extra 300-400, sometimes 600-700 views. So people are going back and watching these games too. But, I think our biggest game to date, there's been a few, but they're up there around between 5,000 and 6,000 now views on YouTube. Live games, we had as much as 800 or 900 for our biggest live games. The postseason games that we did, even without the video, were very popular. The doubleheader in Bloomfield had 900 live viewers and listeners. So, and it's literally quadrupled from last season. So, and I think there's a lot of reasons. I think one reason is we did doing them in HD this year, so they look good on the television screen. You can easily pull them up on the phone via the Finger Lakes One app or the YouTube app, and so. It's growing, and I think the main thing that makes it grow, it's a good product, and the more that you can get insight in watching different teams, the more you get interested to the point you're going to say, oh, that Red Creek Lions game is tonight, and it's on Finger Lakes One. I'm going to watch that game. I want to see what happens. I want to watch Jake Slo play against Damon Hunter. And so I think that's a big part of it, too, is just awareness and that we're doing more. But, yeah, it's fun. I'm going to play some golf now. Hopefully soon, and then we'll try it again next winter. But thanks to all of our listeners and viewers this season here on the Upstate Hoops Podcast and all Finger Lakes One Sports coverage of Wayne Finger Lakes basketball. And for my producer, Jeremy Hunt, for Jason Hunt, for Mike Alessio, for Harold Weber, Dave Barnick, Zach Young, Rhett DeConey, Kevin Korzeneski, Matt Verkey, and Dennis Leahy, and myself. Have a great summer, everybody, and thanks for all the memories this season.
going this year, some big changes, two-man cameras, some HD games, a lot to look forward to. So, Kevin, let's get right to it.
Good evening, everybody. Dave Barnick along with Jim Sinacropi.
Brendan Harrington along with Tony Robinson.
Matt Verkey and Harold Weber, the dog, here at courtside.
Alongside Kevin Korzineski and Mike Alessio.
Nice facility to do basketball.
We're ready for basketball.
Hunter, one against one. And Hunter driving all the way down. Yes! John Drew, beautiful pass. Shot from the corner. Good!
Back by Tyler Collins and carries it.
They have numbers straight to the hole.
And coming wide open on the out of bounds play.
Rises holding north for three. Good! Good!
Here comes Smith. Bounce pass, Turner. Land off it.
Yeah!
Ray way outside. Counted.
Out the back, 360. Gordon up the racing. Good.
Logan to the foul line. Banks the Wolf down low.
Lost again. Right down. Broadway. Count it.
Shot. Oh, nice play.
And a good evening from Newark.
Donald Meisley Gymnasium in Geneva, New York.
Victor High School.
Jack Guinan Gymnasium in Ovid, New York.
Welcome back to Bloomfield High School.
We're live back at the New York Chiropractic College here in Seneca Falls, New York.
Well, I just love these fans in the Atwood. Atwood Animals.
From Waterloo High School.
Outstanding program that you have going, coach.
To play varsity with this group of kids since we were little.
I'd say we just want to keep improving and keep playing better and better.
Senior year, get it with my friends. It's awesome.
He's got doubles, pass over Stone. Up the room, though.
And they find Fleischman for three. Bones.
Devin Franklin behind the back, through the rim, up and under, lays it up and good. 3 points for three. Two in a row! Big drive, following jumper. Good!
6 seconds left to go. Drive to lane. A little runner. He's fouled. And the basket is good. Can you believe this, kid?
They're going to remember Damon Hunter for the rest of their life.
Congratulations to the Newark Reds.
Naples out, Lions still alive, East Rochester still alive, Bonanza, Miners out.
Section titles, everything. If you come into our gym, you can look up Section titles.
Back to the Blue Cross, you gotta get another one.
Another spinning jumper, Teddy Bear PA, sends it into the second row. Wide open, Fleischman takes a three, hits it! He throws it away, Taylor Norris, right-handed layup is good! The post started by Williams, up at the foul and good! West pulls up for three. The Naples Big Green season comes to an end at 19-1.
The North Rose Wolfpack Cougars represent the third wing county team heading to the Blue Cross Arena.
Congratulations to the Lions. Lions headed back to Blue Cross Arena.
And the clock expires. And you are looking live at the Big House, the Blue Cross Arena in Rochester, New York. Pass to PA, the big teddy bear with his first basket of the game. It's another blast.
up off the glass, gets it up ahead to Pendleton. Right-handed layup is good up the glass. Lays it up and gets a roll. Big rebound by Garrett Hoyt. 32 from the basket. Now he drives, lays it up, and good! Wellsville 52, North Girls Wolcott 36. Bermuda for three. Blocked by Carswell. Hunter skipped into PA, lays it up, and that's a good lane sweep for the first time today. Reverse layup is good! And Oscar for three. Bites! Who gives it to Hunter off the glass. He's fouled and makes the basket. The Lions are up eight. Carswell passes to PA. Lays it up and good. The big teddy bear is the big grizzly bear tonight. And the Lions are your 2015 Section 5 Class C3 champions.
Great job by the guys. Number 17, one step closer to East High.